Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we bring you information about many topics related to civil defense. One of the biggest reasons for starting civil defense is to inform and educate the American people about the many reasons why we should be involved locally and nationally to make our families, neighborhoods, and communities safer and more resilient to emergencies and disasters. One organization that I am a member of that is also working hard to help inform and keep us safe is the FBI-supported InfraGuard. This week, we are speaking with Mary Lasky, Chairman of InfraGuard National Disaster Resilience Council, NDRC. I am Preston Schlankofer, your host. Now, I would like to welcome Mary to Civil Defense Radio. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Preston. Thank you for asking me to be on the radio show.
It's our pleasure. We've been trying to get you for a while, but you've been really busy, and we'll talk about some of that busyness here in a little bit. It's really a pleasure having you here.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to read your bio here just to give our audience an introduction to who you are. Mary is the chairman of the InfraGuard National Disaster Resilience Council, NDRC. She is the lead editor of and author of Powering Through, From Fragile Infrastructure to Community Resilience, an action guide to being prepared if there is grid failure. Mary Lasky is a certified business continuity professional, CBCP. She is on the foundation of Resilient Society's board of directors. Mary has been a program manager for business continuity planning for the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory. She is a past president of the Community Emergency Response Network, Inc., CERN, in Howard County, Maryland. While she was president, CERN received two FEMA grants on being prepared for nuclear attack. She is a past president of the Central Maryland chapter of the Association of Contingency Planners, ACP. At the Applied Physics Laboratory, Mary has held a variety of supervisory positions in information technology and in business services. For many years, she was adjunct faculty at the Johns Hopkins University Whiting School of Engineering, teaching in the graduate degree program in technical management. Mary, I'm impressed. You have a lot of credentials there, and you speak from authority about some of the things we're going to talk about today.
Well, thank you, Preston. That's most kind.
There's many people out there that haven't heard of InfraGuard and their association with the FBI and how it supports us. And so if you would, please give us an insight into how that works.
Okay. Well, InfraGuard, it's interesting because it's a putting together of infrastructure guardian. So it's supposed to be protecting our infrastructure. And so it became InfraGuard. I think that's kind of interesting, too. It is an association across the whole United States with over 61,000 members. And members are in chapters, and some states like California have several, and like Maryland, we have one. It's an organization that has a public-private partnership with the FBI, and it is a nonprofit organization. Then with this, the chapters that meet, they have often the FBI representative to each of the chapters helps with programs, and there's been a lot of emphasis on cyber and on active shooter in many of the chapters. In fact, it was a member of InfraGuard who actually found the sniper that was terrorizing the Washington metropolitan area many years ago. So did you know that, Preston?
No, I didn't know that specific, but I remember the reports about the sniper in Northern Virginia and D.C. area.
So one of the advantages to the FBI is that there are 61,000 sets of eyes out looking and caring about the country and reporting things to them. So that's what's in it for the FBI, which is interesting. And my part of InfraGuard is what is called a cross-sector council, And in that cross-sector council, we are the largest cross-sector council with nearly 1,900 people having signed up and saying they want to be part of the council. And they get for that invitations to our meetings, information that I send out to them periodically of important papers that have come out, etc. So they're also showing that they're really concerned about what happens if the grid goes down, because that's the main emphasis of our National Disaster Resilience Council.
Mm. Now, I, as a member, I've been a member for a while. When I was still with ICE, I was a member of the Washington, D.C. area. So after I retired, I got re-engaged here in Virginia, and my home is Richmond. But I get emails from InfraGuard all the time about cyber updates and threats that is being looked at and being warned against. It's just a wealth of information that we have access to as members of InfraGuard that it's very valuable.
Yes, I think that it gives you an inside view also. And so anybody could become a member of InfraGuard. You have to apply. Mm-hmm. And actually, the FBI does a top level look at you to be sure that you're not a foreign national here to do a thing. And so that when we meet as InfraGuard members, we know that everybody else there had this top level look. And so we know that it's a really good environment to work constructively for the country.
That's great. That's great. It can take as much as 6 months for that, let's call it a background investigation, to be completed.
Yes, but I think they're trying to do that much faster now, so it won't take quite so long. It has been a long period of time. Maybe people will forget that they even applied. But I think that what I learned at the national meeting in Chicago on the 8th of September was that this is going much faster now.
Oh, that's good. Within InfraGuard, there are various specialties. It used to be the EMP special interest group that we had, but that has now changed, and that is now the National Disaster Resilience Council, correct?
That is correct. And we decided last year that if you're a SIG, that the government thinks that you're a lobbying organization, a special interest group, and therefore you're in a lobbying organization. So we requested InfraGuard to change the name so that we would all become councils instead of special interest groups.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah, so that's, and at the same time we decided that we've always been broad of looking at more than an electromagnetic pulse. We've been looking at space weather and cyber attacks and what happens if there's a physical attack, or that people use what are called radio frequency weapons. And mm-hmm. So most recently, we've decided that we would look also at what happens if there's earthquakes, because that could damage the grid also.
Oh, yeah.
And what happens if there's a pandemic, because if there's a pandemic, we're not going to have the people coming to work to be sure that everything is going well.
So you're looking at all the majors. I didn't hear anything about financial collapse.
Well, if we don't have the grid, we're going to have the financial collapse.
That's true.
So it's kind of implicit that if we don't have electric power, we're not going to have our water and wastewater systems. We're not going to have telecommunications. And our hospitals will be in very bad shape if we don't have it. And when we talk about it in the NDRC, we're not thinking of it as a power outage for a couple of hours or even a few days. We're thinking of it as a month. at least, that the power could be down. And in our first book that you mentioned in my bio, Powering Through from Fragile Infrastructure to Community Resilience, we talked about that it could take months or even up to a year. In the latest book that we're working on, Powering Through Building Critical Infrastructure Resilience, we've set that as a month. And that could be a long time if you didn't have power. But we've seen examples of that in Puerto Rico.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's good. A month as a starting point for looking at that is a good point to begin, because up until that, people still have, or at least until at least 2 weeks, people still think that, oh, the power's coming on anytime. Maybe after that, people are less optimistic.
Yes, I should think. There's been comments that after 2 or 3 days, that if we're not careful and we're not prepared for this, that civil authority could be having a hard time. There could be unrest, et cetera, and people becoming anxious, especially if we don't have communications and the ability to share with people what's going on.
Oh, yeah. That's important. Communication.
So since we're on the civil defense radio, let me just say that I think that what you're trying to do on these broadcasts is really important, because if we don't have people prepared for these kind of things, we certainly won't be in a position to recover. If people don't have food and don't have water and don't have at least some kind of medical supplies, that would really be very bad. And so I applaud you for the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. It's been a passion of mine for a while, and it took a while to get here. I had a journey of my own that I went through to understand what needed to be done, and I think that journey helped me understand that there's few people that really understand the things that you and I know could really hurt our country and hurt the many of the people that we know and love.
Yes. Well, one of the things that I think is probably the most, because it happens all of the time, we have cyber attacks, and so people are more familiar, and although they might not understand what a cyber attack really would be, but we might be having cyber attacks against our electric grid. In fact, there are some beliefs that, like what happened over in the Ukraine when the Russians attacked the grid over there, that they were inside the grid in the Ukraine for a period of time before they launched the attack. And so there is the thought that and China are probably inside the grid, and any time that they wanted to, they could take down our grid. So that's really scary, and protecting our grid is such an important part, because all of the critical infrastructures rely on it.
Yes. Well, Ted Koppel's book, Lights Out, talks about that exactly, where he says that the Russians and Chinese are in our power grid already, looking for vulnerabilities and mapping it, and that way they can pull the plug on us anytime. And I just recently read an article about the Ukraine attack, and the person who wrote that code to do that wrote it in a specific way where they were counting on the countermeasures happening in a certain way, and if they didn't, which they didn't do the process the way the hacker expected them to, they, by mistake, they were able to override that threat within an hour. And so I don't think the Russians will be that lackadaisical next time. I think they'll whatever they do,
they'll improve their plan.
Exactly. That's what I was looking for. They'll definitely improve. Yeah. So there's such a threat out there, and the Stuxnet virus that we and the Israelis put into the Iranian nuclear power development is an example of what can happen to our grid. Things can just melt down.
Yes, definitely. And so one of the other major things that we're concerned about in the NDRC is, what if there is an electromagnetic pulse attack, a high altitude nuclear explosion that would cause that pulse? And China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran all have that in their plans, that they could use this as a tool against the United States. And if that happened, there are a couple of different types of pulses that could take out electronics and our big transformers, et cetera. So that is really a serious kind of thing. And we know how to go in and protect. Our military, back many years ago in the 1900s, 1980s and 1990s, actually protected a lot of their equipment against an EMP. So we know how to go about protecting it, and we just need the will and a way of providing the cost payback so that the utilities can do it. So that's one of those things that we worry about and are concerned about.
Yes. Let's take a quick break, and we will be back in a moment. Hey friends, please allow me to speak with you about something you may want to add to your regular maintenance routine, as well as your preparedness supplies. A few years ago, I came across an article in Preparedness Magazine that caught my attention. My wife and I have always been health conscious, and we have taken various supplements over the years. However, this article introduced us to the world of essential oils. My wife began researching to find a reputable company with high quality products. What she found was a company that we have now been with for about 4 years, using their products, many of them daily. The company is doTERRA, and their products are certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils. Essential oils come in all grades on the scale, but doTERRA oils are, in our opinion, at the top. Sure, you can go to Walmart or the local pharmacy and purchase essential oils, but not many of them are recommended for internal use. Many of our oils can be used orally, topically, and diffused for their wonderful aromatic fragrance and health benefits. Some of our favorites we use almost daily are clove, lemon, frankincense, lavender, Angar blend, peppermint, and melaleuca, also known as tea tree oil. These oils have become our go-to remedy for managing our health throughout the year. In fact, we credit our oils for our overall good health. You can too. Just visit our website at www.oilsforlifetoday. That's oils4lifetoday.com, and explore the wonderful world of certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils for yourself. You can also find our link on the show notes at the bottom. And we're back with Mary Lasky talking about InfraGuard and the National Disaster Resilience Council. So Mary, before we took that break, we were talking about the threats, and we've talked a little bit about the work that you have done, but I'd like to get a little bit more into this new powering through that you guys are working on. It sounds like, just from the title, that it's got a different focus than the first one. Now, I've read the first one and the other book that was produced by InfraGuard, AMP SIG, the Triple Threat Power Crisis Exercises, which I found were excellent. every emergency manager should have that book and be using those exercises to test their local emergency processes and decide, you know, how far they want to go down that rabbit hole, which I think they should go all the way so that they can learn just how dire of a situation our local communities would be in if we were to lose power for an extended period of time. But powering through sounds like number two sounds like a really, really good book, and I'm looking forward to getting a copy of that once it's finished and published. So can you give us a better insight of that?
Oh, great, Preston. I would really like to do that. The new Powering Through book is taking shape, and it should be able to go out for major reviews. Like the first book that we put out, you mentioned Ted Koppel. Well, he gave us a wonderful endorsement on our first Powering Through book. So we'll hope that maybe some people will endorse the book. But the book's focus is to look at each of several of the critical infrastructures. We don't look at all of them, but look at several of the critical infrastructures and say, we ask three questions of all of them. The first question is, what happens if the grid goes down to your particular infrastructure? So like, if the grid goes down, what happens to water or what happens to communications? And then the second question is, what can you do, what can your infrastructure do to help with bringing the grid back up? And so it goes into how can the grid itself help itself, and goes into how the grid gets back up, which is called a black starting capability. So, and then we need food. The workmen will need food, they'll need water, et cetera, and they can't bring back the grid unless they have telecommunications. So that's the second question. And the third question is, what can that infrastructure do today to be more resilient if this particular thing happens? So recommendations of actions that are needed for that particular infrastructure. So we talk about quite a few of the infrastructures, but not all of them. We start off with electric power and then go to telecommunications, because the two of them are so linked that telecommunications need the electric power, but the electric power has to have communications because you don't want a person up on a pole without being able to communicate what's going on.
Yeah.
And so therefore the communications are really key. Then we talk about water and food and go into transportation and look at all of the different kinds of transportation, which are vast, and that ties to our whole supply chain, of covering that, of what we need to do with the supply chain. And then we talk about hospitals. And then we get into emergency management and what could emergency managers do. And you nicely mentioned the exercise book, and that is really important to be thinking about these things ahead of time. And after that, we have a chapter on the National Guard, because it's going to be providing support and help in any of our domestic emergencies that happen. And after that, we take a look at chemical kinds of concerns, and we end with looking at information technology, with looking at what happens with our critical pieces of the cyber world that keeps things going, like our water systems and electric power systems. And then we look at data centers, and we look at the Internet of Things, which is making all of this, all of our systems, more and more vulnerable as we depend more and more on the whole information technology world. So that's that's the book kind of in a nutshell, and that's what we're doing. We would hope that in the future we'd be able to really get in and talk more about the financial system, but on the electric power chapter, we do talk a lot about how the utilities might be able to recover cost, because that's one of the things of a reason why they might not be going in and putting in the protections, is because of the way that they're set up as public utilities, and that the utilities have to be responsive to their shareholders. And so therefore, anything that they spend here has to be able that they get a benefit from it.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, they're in business. Most of them are private enterprises, especially the larger ones. And they do have to answer to shareholders and things like that. So that is something that they have to look at, but it should not be an excuse. I know some friends of ours who have been fighting with the regulatory organizations that oversee the power industry and the shenanigans that have been going on there. And we need more oversight and more exposure of what's going on in that industry than what is currently happening.
That is certainly true. And there are some of the utilities that are quietly putting in some protections, but it's certainly not what we need as a country. We need a lot more, and we need people to be aware of all of this. I mean, there's a lot been said that if people are aware and know of these kind of things, that if it happens, they will make good decisions when it first happens. And so if people are prepared, that would be really very beneficial.
Yes. And part of that preparation is understanding the process of what will happen after the grid goes down. It's not one of these things where, you know, you sit around on your hands and wait for somebody to come knock on your door, say, okay, we're here to take you to the shelter. No, it's not going to be like that, because in a worst case scenario, nobody's coming. Like a friend of ours says, the cavalry's not coming.
And that's right. Yeah.
So it's incumbent upon everybody to understand the progression of things, and how, if certain things happen, how civility could dramatically decrease in a quick time frame. And depending on where you live, and things could get worse quicker than other areas, especially, you know, big cities. We've seen New York City go crazy more than once in a power outage. So that's a big threat that people ought to be aware of. But
yes. So one other thing, Preston, that I would really like to mention is that since 2011, when when the EMP Special Interest Group got started, we have held a summit every year since, and that summit is going to be held this year on the 21st of November, and it's the kind of thing that we then broadcast for all InfraGuard members to listen to if they want to. So they don't have to be here in Washington, D.C. area in order to participate in the summit. And we held a workshop the day before, and that's an invitation with no press, where the summit has can have the press come. And at the workshop, we will be looking at a variety of things that we think are important topics to work on. But with that one also, it will be broadcast so that people in InfraGuard could listen in and participate and ask questions actually at the workshop. So those two things are coming up on the 20th and 21st of November.
That's great. I'm going to be there for sure. This will be my second one. Definitely. I missed the one 3 years ago, just because I found out too late and I wasn't able to make it. But last year was fantastic. I learned a lot. I met some very important people that are in this initiative and part of InfraGuard. You know most of these people on a first name basis. I call them Mr. or Doctor. And can you just give us an idea of some of the great people that we have that are involved? You don't have to mention any names, but I know there's some backgrounds that are important.
Yes, well, we have people that have been on the, there was an EMP commission that was started by Congress, and we have people that have been involved with the EMP commission. Their lawyer, their technical advisor. We've been very fortunate to have people take an interest in what we're doing. We have last year's, the person that spoke was the person that was the most knowledgeable person at NSA in cyber, speak at the summit. And we had Senator Ron Johnson, and I just learned today that he will be speaking again at our summit, which will be taped and then made available, so anybody will be able to actually hear Ron Johnson this year. He spoke at the workshop last year, which we didn't tape and make available on a website. So I'm very excited that he will be doing that. We also have a set of five people from Idaho National Lab that are doing some very interesting work in testing water systems and electric power systems, etc., that will be coming and presenting also. So excited about that. We've asked some other people that we're keeping our fingers crossed that they will say yes, that they're coming. We have invited a couple of people from the National Security Council to come and speak because the new executive order that came out in March this year is managed by the National Security Council. And so, and then the Department of Homeland Security is really responsible for carrying out that executive order, and the person at DHS who has that responsibility is a person named Scott Baucus, and he's been invited also to speak. So
great, man, that'll be action-packed. Okay, we're coming up on the end of our time, so can you briefly tell us why would somebody want to get involved with InfraGuard, and how would they do that if they wanted to get involved?
Okay, that's a great question. If you go to InfraGuard.org, you can, or just query it on Google, you can get to that site, and at that site you will definitely be able to learn about how to become a member and get the right form, fill it out, and send it to where they say to send it, and then you can become a member. So I hope people will take action and do that. And you don't have to become a member of a chapter. You can be an InfraGuard member without being associated with a chapter. But if there is a chapter near you, you may want to do that too.
Yeah, you'll get information directly from them.
So I hope that if they become InfraGuard members, that they will want to become part of the National Disaster Resilience Council and come and work with us about how to protect the country and make it safer and take our vulnerability of our grid off of the plate so that our adversaries cannot use that as a weapon against us.
Yes, yes, I agree. And that's one of the reasons why I got involved again with InfraGuard. So do you have any closing comments that you want to make? Any, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, we'll have those links at the bottom of the show notes. So anybody wants to do that, they'll have that available. But if you want to have any closing comments.
Well, I just want to say thank you, Preston, for asking me to be on the radio program, and thank you for your good work of getting the word out to people that are listening to your show. So thank you for asking me to be on.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resilience problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page of our website at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio, where we post information on the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. I wish to thank Mary Lasky again, and thank you, our friends, who are listening to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared. And may God bless you and keep you until next time.